Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show. Regular viewers will notice something amiss this week. There's something called the World Cup coming up, so the sports team are sharing our studio for the next couple of months. You can watch their videos from June the 12th on theguardian.com/sport, and in the meantime, here's what's coming up on our show. Angelina Jolie sides with evil in Disney's fantasy epic Maleficent. Greg Kinnear sides with God in Christianity's fantasy epic Heaven is for Real. And dick jokes, fart jokes, and occasionally funny jokes in Seth MacFarlane's A Million Ways to Die in the West. But first, let's tiptoe to The Edge of Tomorrow, a sci-fi yarn that steals Groundhog Day's time travel conceit. This stars Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt as future heroes trying to save the world the same day at a time. Guess which one of them we got to interview.
You alright, Cage?
I think I broke something.
What?
My back. The only thing I can feel are my lips.
Now listen carefully. This is a very important rule. This is the only rule. You get injured on the field, you better make sure you die.
Why?
Last time I was in combat, I was hit. I was bleeding out, just not fast enough. I woke up in a field hospital with 3 pints of someone else's blood, and I was out. I lost the power. Do you understand? I think we'd better start over, don't you?
What?
If you know that you die and you're going to come back to life, what would you use that for? What position would you put yourself in?
What would I learn? I'd want to learn something, like a new skill. I'd learn how to become like an amazing chef. Something where I'm not fighting or in the mud, you know, maybe like learn how to ballroom dance. Something like that.
This might be a bit bleak, but I saw it as more of a way to experiment with ways to die.
Oh my God, how morose of you. Yeah, I know, I wouldn't necessarily... Jesus Christ. I'll let that be your take on it.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to save you. We're getting slaughtered. You need to get us off this beach.
The film's a lot about rehearsing to get perfection, and I wondered if you felt it was a comment on filmmaking in any way.
Yeah, it is in a way. I think there's a lot of repetition in films, and there's a lot of focus required to perfecting something, perfecting a moment in a scene, and so, I don't know if it's a comment on filmmaking in general, but it certainly felt like we were making a film on top of a film.
That's Emily Blunt in The Edge of Tomorrow, and joining me now are Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shord. Peter, every time we film this episode, you tell me that this is dull as ditch water, that Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise don't have any chemistry. Are you going to say something different this time?
That's funny, you asked me exactly the same question yesterday. If ever a film suffered from the anxiety of influence, it's this. The point about Groundhog Day is, it's not simply that Groundhog Day was funny and this is trying to be exciting. I think Groundhog Day was funny and exciting, and it brought an extraordinary high level of sophistication and wit to that conceit, whereas Edge of Tomorrow just does it and does it and does it and does it, and then sort of halfway through kind of forgets about it because it realises that if it really is trapped in the loop, then the straightforward screenplay narrative isn't going to continue. So it kind of inches its way out of there. And I found it kind of dull, to be honest with you.
Well, it is an action film at heart.
It is an action film, yes. So the idea of some kind of time loop, time-space loop, which stymies action, this is obviously not going to be tolerated, or not tolerated for long. And I've got to say, the idea of the time loop which changes the Tom Cruise character's personality, the idea that he grows, that he learns something about himself, learns how to be a hero, he reaches inside, finds the hero inside himself, that's fine. But the idea that him being kind of a bad guy before isn't really dramatised. He is, in theory, a coward, a kind of PR slickster, and a blackmailer. But Tom Cruise isn't really showing that at the beginning. He just looks like a regular Tom Cruise hero, and then he just becomes what we always know what he's going to be. That is to say, the A-list alpha male superstar who kind of wins Emily Blunt's heart. And there are no spoilers there. But I found it unsatisfying. I don't think there's nothing wrong with taking the Groundhog Day conceit. There's no copyright on it, as long as you do something else. But inevitably, people coming to this movie surely are going to remember Groundhog Day at every moment. And it's an awful kind of karmic kind of justice being enacted on this movie.
I don't know, Catherine. I disagree a bit. I thought Tom Cruise sold the coward quite well as the slick PR guy at the start.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I think there's a lot of pleasures in this. I thought You know, it's quite ludicrous, and the aliens that have invaded have got a strangely keen taste for tourist hotspots as their places to lurk. They come down the Thames, and they're, I won't give the plot away, but there's a special bit
they're
in Paris.
Art lovers.
Yeah, they're art lovers. Emily Blunt sort of, you know, sells it as this ridiculously muscly, tough soldier. You see her endlessly in the same weird yoga pose from which she rises in an amazingly muscly way. And then Noah Taylor is the mad scientist kind of, I'm not going to do the accent.
Is he Jamaican?
Yeah. And he's always having to give expository dialogue about, you know, just banana stuff. And then Brendan Gleeson, it's just got one expression as the general who thinks Tom Cruise is current. Well, these are good things. I thought it was quite exciting, quite liked it. I know what Peter means. There is this inherent problem with it, but there's fun to be had.
Where does this stand in the Cruise canon? I mean, he's done Oblivion recently. He's into these kind of sci-fi.
It's a hell of a lot better than that, isn't it?
It's much better than Oblivion, right?
Yeah, and what else has he done before that? He's done other duff things. And I mean, Night and Day, of which I was a fan.
I thought was slightly better, to be honest with you.
Wow, okay.
And of course the MI4, which I think was better. I don't know, he does, of course, we know Tom Cruise can be a great bad guy. I mean, he was absolutely brilliant in Tropic Thunder and Magnolia. He can really show a kind of sense of humour about himself. If he's given a real script and not just a kind of multiplex sort of genre script, he can do really well.
There was a really interesting piece in the LA Weekly last week with a writer called Amy Nicholson arguing that Tom Cruise's conservatism in what he picks now is our fault for attacking him quite so much. So, you know, if you don't like his films now, it's your guy's fault.
Well, yeah, it's really hard.
I can only apologise to Tom Cruise. The weight of blame on my shoulders is crushing.
Stop, wait. Stop, wait a second. Wait a second. Because I've been thinking. I mean, this thing's in my blood. So maybe there's some way I can transfer it. To you.
I've tried everything. It doesn't work.
I mean, have you, you know, tried all the options?
Oh, you mean sex? Yeah, tried it.
How many times?
All right.
That's The Edge of Tomorrow, and we'll give it a few more runs with Peter. I'm sure he'll come around eventually. Now, on to Maleficent, which stars Angelina Jolie in a revisionist take on the Sleeping Beauty fable. Here's Jolie and her co-star Sam Riley trying to corrupt our own beautiful innocent, Andrew Pulver.
Well, well. What a glittering assemblage, King Stefan. Royalty? Nobility? The gentry, and how quaint. Even the rebel.
To be honest, I think I was drawn to the evil. At first, just the fun of playing the character that I was always afraid of and kind of drawn to when I was a little girl. I found her just mesmerizing. She was so powerful and elegant and terrifying.
Curious little beastie. Bring her to me.
When she was turning me into something, they'd sort of told me a sort of pose to pull. Or when you sort of pretend like you've just flown into the thing.
Yeah, no, that's when I saw him, you have to sort of do sort of wing flapping.
I didn't really know I was going to prepare for it because I like to do my homework and things. It's part of the fun of doing this job. But I had them. They organised for me to spend a day with a raven in a room. And I watched him for hours and sort of tried to... I'd never seen a raven before, I don't think. They're very big and quite intimidating because they've got a lot of personality. They're quite vain and they know their power. And I also worked with a movement coach after studying the raven. And head movements and things like that, and to the point where I was actually did run around a room flapping my arms around like a bird.
Peter, this is Angelina's first live action role since 2010's The Tourist. Is this any better?
I think it's better, yeah. It reminded me in a way of how much I kind of missed Angelina Jolie. She's such a potent, powerful screen presence. She's almost like an animation herself. This is a live action that's been digitally tweaked. Her cheekbones and face have been kind of tweaked to bring out the sort of mad, kind of sharp cheekbones and the planes and the faces of her facial musculature and all the rest of it. And it made me realise that she is genuinely an incredible icon. She is like the Sophia Loren of our day. She has this extraordinary, hyper-real beauty. And she is a real screen presence. She really is. I quite enjoyed this. It's kind of silly. It's part of this sort of revisionist thing like Wicked, where you have to say, well, you know, was the Wicked Witch as bad as all that? How did she get to be that way? And it's not bad. It's not bad. But it wouldn't be anything at all without Angelina Jolie. I mean, it just wouldn't exist. Take her away and the whole thing just collapses in a shower of pixels.
We had a glut of fairy tale films, things like Snow White and The Huntsman recently. Is this simply a hangover from that, or is it something more?
This is much, much better because Angelina Jolie is the star, because they have made her kind of complex, nuanced villainy the centre of the movie and not some simpering kind of youngster. She kind of carries it. Usually Elle Fanning can totally steal it from other people. Elle Fanning plays the Sleeping Beauty character, but she, like everybody else, just has to bow down to Angelina's awesome force. And it made me realise how great she is, a kind of mommy dearest character. She was Grendel's mum in Beowulf. She was terrific in that, this sort of surreal, gigantic figure. And also Colin Farrell's mum in Alexander the Great. And I think this is another of her great kind of mommy dearest kind of roles.
I know you're there. Don't be afraid.
I am not afraid.
Then come out.
Then you'll be afraid.
No, I won't. I know who you are.
Do you?
You're my fairy godmother.
Angelina Jolie making good from bad in Maleficent there. And next up, Heaven is for Real, in which a little boy appears to find proof of God. Let's hope he shares it with the rest of us.
The pain that I suffered watching my son that close to death.
The hospital said that your son was not expected to survive. Use the word miracle.
He saw things that I can't really explain.
Your son had a near-death experience.
Randall Wallace's faith-based film, taken from the best-selling real-life account by Todd Burpo, follows Colton, a nipper whose near-death experience sends him up into the clouds for playtime with the angels and a chit-chat with the dead. Back on Earth are Greg Kinnear and Kelly Riley playing the baffled parents, trying to share Colton's story with the doubtful masses.
But everything he talks about is impossible.
We all want to be supportive, but we can't have our town turn into a circus.
They don't believe me, do they?
Some people might be afraid to believe.
Don't you think we need to be talking about this life?
For me, Christian movies are like Christian rock, in that if the tune's any good, it doesn't really matter what the message is behind it.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. This seems to me a significant jump on from the faith films that one had of about 3 years ago. Things like The Way Back with Dean Cain, there was a sort of little spate of them, which were all of a certain quality, a certain undeniable. They were all definitely faith films. You couldn't really see anybody else going to see them. Heaven is for Real is a big leap on in that it's got Greg Kinnear and Thomas Hayden Church, Kelly Riley, Margot Martindale, all proper people. And the scenes in which they are giving it their all. And of course, actors love this sort of thing because not only are the films well-funded, but they give them enormous opportunity and scope to you know, have crises of faith and do lots of heavy-duty acting. Those are pretty good. Thomas Hayden Church is a lovely kind of little bit of vinegar in the mix, as Ange was. You know, he adds a real proper note of sort of workaday scepticism, which is nice. The problem is that it still comes with all the sort of gluey little boy fantasy images. There's a, you know, you go to heaven with him and see the angels.
What's heaven look like?
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah?
Well, it's a bit like a sort of Athena poster version of heaven.
Better than our set today, or
it's pretty similar. Oh. You're there. So is Peter. And there's I mean, it's very full of rainbows. You know, it's very like a child would imagine. So yeah, that really lets it down and makes it embarrassing. But apart from that, you know, it's an interesting sort of marker in the way in which faith films are evolving. You know, in 5 years' time, it's possible, I think, to see a faith film that won't look like this.
Now, Peter, while Catherine was up in the clouds, you were going the other way with a British comedy called Downhill.
Yeah, I've seen this film. I have to, very strangely, disagree with my colleague Mike McHale, an excellent critic who's my colleague and has seen this film and doesn't like it very much. I saw it and rather liked it, actually. I liked it very much. It is a kind of middle-aged guy reunion comedy, similar to Edgar Wright's The World's End. But it hasn't got the same sci-fi thing. And in a funny way, though I very much enjoyed Edgar Wright's The World End, I sort of wondered if it could do without the sci-fi dimension, if we could just concentrate on what it would be like if four guys just went on holiday and started finding out about each other and themselves. And this is what James Rouse's Downhill does. It's a pretty straightforward sort of faux mockumentary kind of thing. The son of one of them is filming for a kind of project of his own, his dad and his three mates, going on a kind of coast-to-coast walk across England, across the lakes and all the rest of it. And it's pretty route one. They kind of find out stuff about themselves. They all have crises. But there's a lot of fun in it as well. There's a terrifically good performance from an actor, Ned Dennehy, as this very grumpy, misanthropic guy who kind of hates everyone because he is, of course, privately very lonely. And he's an actor who I must have seen in a thousand things. And I'm afraid and sorry and ashamed to say I hadn't really noticed him. But he's actually terrifically good in this. And I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a really nice little film.
Surrounded by green.
Yeah. I'm afraid I put a bit of a duck's arse in it.
All right. Ooh. Wow, that's been a long time. Yeah.
We're going to have these mics on for the whole duration.
Keith, really important, right? It's vital that Luke gets everything covered.
Yeah, of course. No, I understand that, Luke.
Oh, my God. Luke, get out of this. Oh, wow. Oh.
Oh, that is nice.
That is nice.
Yeah.
Why don't the sheep sort of fall into any of the holes? They've sort of got such good legs, haven't they? Really, really strong legs.
That's James Rouse's Downhill, and now onto A Million Ways to Die in the West. This is Seth MacFarlane's take on the comedy western, and it rolls into town with an all-star cast. Let's take a look.
Oh, hey, look, it's the ice. Why is it so big?
So it doesn't melt. It's actually really interesting how they do it. It's this one company out in Boston that...
That went south so fast!
The American West is a terrible place in time. Everything out here that's not you wants to kill you.
Seth MacFarlane takes his abrasive brand of scatological humour way out west. Here he is as Albert, a cowardly sheep farmer who recruits a gun-toting cowgirl to help him beat the varmints and win back his gal. Charlize Theron is the obliging sidekick. Amanda Seyfried's the one that got away. Liam Neeson and Neil Patrick Harris are on varmint duty.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair.
Catherine, is this a Blazing Saddles or a Wild Wild West?
Well, I suspect it might be better than Blazing Saddles. I mean, you know, people sort of talk about Blazing Saddles as if it's sort of this great classic. And, you know, it doesn't stand up that well. It's one of those films that, you know, it's like Airplane. You think of it as this great classic. And it is funny, you know, but then, you know, it seems quite slow. I think what this one does is something sort of more interesting in taking the modern sensibility and inserting it into the old West. And, you know, this guy who sort of realises what a nightmarish place this is to live. And that's a very rich comedy scene. I'm kind of amazed how much I like this because, you know, you have this extremely self-righteous backlash against Seth MacFarlane, which I suspect is still a hangover from his Oscars debacle a year and a bit ago.
Right.
But it's also because a lot of people objected to Ted. We rather liked it. But, you know, people are really, really don't like this guy. I saw this at a multimedia screening, so that's at 6:30 in the evening. The laughs kept coming from me you know, included. This really hits many more times than it misses. It's ambitious, you know, it's thematically interesting. It's well played, it's snappy. You know, there's some gross out stuff in there, but there's some really good jokes in there as well. I really liked it. Also, there's a cameo, you know, from somebody from one of my favourite films of all time, which, you know, that's a clincher for me.
Do you think films like this tend to suffer at being press screened like that? Because it's quite a strange environment in the press screening.
Definitely.
There's only a few people in the room for a start.
Absolutely.
And if nobody's laughing, you feel kind of awkward.
Absolutely.
Laughing on your own. Right?
Many and many a time I've sat there laughing and I thought, what is it with you bunch of miserable so-and-sos? I think there is a real critical kind of prejudice against comedies from critics, especially critics who think that it's their job to be funny at film's expense. They are very ungenerous and obtuse at what we might call professional show business comedy. People like Seth MacFarlane, who are doing it and doing it for a living very successfully.
I think anyone who's not a fan of Seth MacFarlane should go into this knowing that you do have similar things to Ted. You have jokes that are very close to the bone in terms of race and homophobia. There's a little, it's quite close to the edge all the same, right? It's hard to defend it fully, I guess.
I don't know.
I think, right?
I mean, you know, it's within the context. They're laughing at the racism and homophobia of the time.
Mm.
I think that's okay. I mean, you know, no? Is that not true?
I think it's the same type of joke as Ted, that he pushes it maybe slightly too far and glorifies that process.
Yeah, but that's part of the fun of it, isn't it? And I mean, you know, if you're going to have comedy that's endlessly neutered, well, it's, you know, there's limited rewards in that. The one thing I would say that I didn't like about this film is a very vain performance by MacFarlane. You know, he looks great. He looks better than everyone else. He looks fantastic, you know. He's got this lovely top on at one point that makes his body look just amazing. And one of the things about the Tom Cruise film is that one of its merits is that he doesn't get his top off, so you're not distracted by his weird body, you know, which is simply a vanity move. The Seth MacFarlane character, he's shown to be the greatest guy in the world, and you have very unironic speeches where people say, "You're so great, you're so kind, I love you," you know.
You're the only sensitive guy in the
world.
Yeah,
you're so nice. And you know, Charlize Theron falls for him, and Amanda Seyfried's been going out with him, and you know, that's a shame, because that undermines the auteur nature of this, and it is an auteur project. You know, it is one man's vision, and I think it's done really well.
We were going to go check out the shooting gallery over there. You guys want to join?
Wait, what?
Yeah, it'd be fun, right?
Oh, yes. And let's make things interesting. A nickel, a target.
You know, that's actually a little rich for my blood. How about a penny?
What's the matter, Albert? Is business bad? A penny. It is. Good Lord, Albert, you're such a cheapskate.
Wow!
Let's go, Louise. You can shear me on. Oh, no, I didn't!
That's A Million Ways to Die in the West, and that's it from us this week. Thanks to Catherine and to Peter for joining me. Thanks to you for watching. Extra special thanks to our audio producer, Thibaut, who's leaving after this week. Bon chance, Thibaut. You're a sound guy in more ways than one. Sam Brooks is back next week, and we'll see you then.